Your brand deserves better than one-size-fits-all branded clothing. Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your team will want to wear. Backed by above and beyond expertise, go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
Alive and kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up this morning, the latest fermented food research from County Cork, the effect of stress on our hormones and how you can keep yours in check with endocrinologist Dr. Mary Ryan. And I meet author of a new book, You Versus You, Adam Corcoran, who credits mixed martial arts with saving him. So what kind of health and wellness week did I have? Well, I'd have to say it was quite a big one. My six-year-old daughter dropped my 16kg kettlebell on her foot, which resulted in a trip to Temple Street for an x-ray. Now, thankfully, she is fine. We got very lucky. It's just a little bit bruised with a suspected shadow on one of her toes is how they described it. So obviously, I've told them many times that the kettlebells and weights in my room are off limits, as is my bedroom, which is on the top floor of our house. But rules are made to be broken when you're that age, aren't they? And kids just want to do what their parents do. Although it turns out it was actually her teddy, Winnie the Pooh, that was attempting the weights. And luckily, as I say, she's left with just some bruising and a slight shadow of a fracture on one of her toes. So she is in a boot for 3 weeks as a precaution. And we've had our days in the sunshine, wings clipped a little. But look, it's all good. We got away scot-free almost. I feel it could have been way worse. And I have had the pleasure over the last few years of working with Temple Street for Ireland AM for the Halloween and Christmas appeals. And it is such a special place. And while I was there this week, I met one of my favourite members of staff there, a very special man. And I have managed to convince him to come on next week's show. So you will have to tune in for that. And my dad's dementia has deteriorated rather rapidly since lockdown. I have been in contact with the Alzheimer's Association. And I must say, I have found them a great support and a wealth of information, which is why I wanted to mention it. When you're in a fog of difficult family decisions, to be able to have somebody there at the end of the phone who knows what they're talking about and gives you a clear plan is just incredible. And Joanne, who I've been dealing with there, says there has been a pattern of deterioration with people that she's been in contact with and families, because with lockdown and all this, we've all had changes in routine, reduced social contact and stimulation. So I'm sure it's happening all across the country with all types of illnesses. So yes, it has been a tough week with all of that. But I'm a great woman for a list and getting a plan of action going. And look, we're a great family for talking things out and keeping a sense of humour going. And my dad himself has said to me over the years that real love is not during the good times, it's during the bad times. Yeah, let's just say we're going through real love at the moment. And has the Corona coaster, as I introduced you to in recent weeks, that term, has it brought you down the avenue of regret yet? Obviously, I know I've been thinking I should have gone to every single party that I was ever invited to, or any night out, I should have just gone. No matter how I felt, I should have just dragged my ass there. And to be honest with you, I think I really did with all the ones I really wanted to go to or should have been there. But now we can't. You just wonder why you weren't out night and day. But maybe it's the little cuppas that you were going to meet up with people for that you put on the long finger. I had one in particular with an old friend that I met at the work Christmas party. I hadn't seen her for years. We used to work together at another radio station and I swore we'd meet. And of course we didn't. And now we can't. And I even started wondering this week if my decision to stick with two kids and not have a third baby was right, because I was too hectic to even consider the dog the kids keep begging me for. So there was no way I was having a child that was dependent on me. And now, of course, everything's slowed down. You think you'd have loads of time for a baby. But no, I took myself away from Regret Avenue quite quickly. I rang the pal that I didn't get to see for that cup of tea to see how lockdown has been treating her. And we've been texting since. And I'm just enjoying the family that I have right now. And of course, sleeping through the night. A couple of weeks back, dietitian Orla Walsh was on the show and fermented foods came up, and she was talking about the virtues of having a healthy gut, and her advice was to try and eat as many plants as possible in a week and to make them more diverse. Now, I'm fascinated by the microbiome, which is why when I saw that new research had come from APC Microbiome SFI Research Centre and UCC, and this is all going on just down the road in Cork, I had to have them on the show. And Professor John Cryan is on the line now. Hello, John. How are you?
Very good.
Now, John, I say I'm fascinated by the microbiome, but you've made it your life's work to study it.
Well, yeah, it's quite interesting. You know, it's become one of the hottest areas in all areas of biomedicine right now, and it just can't be ignored. So I'm initially trained as a neuroscientist, and that might seem a long way away from the gut, but we've started to, over the last decade or more, myself and my colleagues in Cork have really been drawn by the data showing how important the gut microbiome is for all aspects of health and maybe even brain health.
So for people who don't know, what is our microbiome?
Yeah, so our microbiome, it's basically the trillions of microorganisms, particularly bacteria, but also viruses and other things that we have within our gut. And they're really our friends that kind of keep us with the best health overall. They inform our immune system. They basically keep us in check, and they inform the development of many of the systems in the body. And so what's been shown is that in a variety of disease states, there has been changes in the microbiome that are seen as quite negative. And as we age, also the microbiome starts to reduce in its diversity. And so a lot of focus now is in trying to bolster the microbiome and trying to increase diversity in certain circumstances and targeted for all aspects of health. And what I'm interested in, of course, is in relation to things like stress and brain health.
Because, as you said, you started off looking at neuro, looking at the brain, and now you're looking at the gut. But we've started to call that the second brain. So can you describe that link a little bit? What is the gut-brain axis?
Yeah, so basically our brain is able to receive signals from all over our organs in our body, but in particular also from our gut. And there are a variety of pathways that they talk to each other. And so over the years, largely initially in animal studies, we've been able to show that if you, for example, deplete the bacteria in the gut altogether, then the brain doesn't develop properly. And these are quite dramatic studies. And so we're showing that it's particularly in early life that you need to have appropriate microbes in your gut for proper brain function. The same with stress response, that basically you have a different stress response if the microbes are not there. And then we were able to show that specific strains of bacteria could actually influence this brain development and also influence the stress response in animal studies. And the big challenge we have right now, and where a lot of our focus that's funded by SFI, is trying to dig into the mechanisms of how is this happening? How could microbes in the gut influence what's going on in the brain? And then how much of this can we translate to the human situation?
So from the ordinary human situation, what are we supposed to be doing? How can we look after our gut health and get those microbiomes in, whether it's feeding our kids, feeding ourselves?
That's a brilliant question. And so what we can say right now, we know there are certain things that negatively influence the microbiome. We know that having a very a diet that's very heavily in over-processed foods, certain sweeteners are quite bad for our microbiome. So we can try and avoid them as much as we can. Increasing the diversity is really important. Diversity is been well studied in this regard. And also increasing the amount of fiber. Fiber is really the substrate, the starting material from which the microbiome then can actually act on these fibers to produce key chemicals that our bodies wouldn't have without us. They're like, you know, these little factories. And so increasing fiber is really important. Other things we know is trying to avoid the amount of antibiotics is really important. And then things that we don't have a choice over, but we know that mode of delivery at birth. So if you're born by C-section, you have a different starting microbiome than if you're born by normal vaginal delivery. So these are things that have been very well studied in the field. And so what we're trying to do is look at how they're impacting on gut-brain signaling across the lifespan, in early life, in adolescence, and all the way to old age.
And how is our gut health connected to our mood and our psychological well-being?
Yeah, and that's one of the big findings that we've been able to make over the years when we're able to show that basically a lot of aspects of psychological well-being are influenced. And this might seem very surprising, and people often ask, you know, well, you know, why will this be? But we have to remember that these bacteria were there long before humans were. And so our brain has evolved to basically sense some of these bacterial signals. And so for normal, proper brain function, we need to have appropriate microbes in our gut. And so there's a number of studies now in depression and in anxiety showing that there might be changes at the level of the microbiome in terms of specific species of bacteria that are out of kilter, and that maybe one of the strategies that we would have is trying to target the microbiome and put bugs back in. And this is what we've coined psychobiotics. This is a term that my colleague Ted Dynan here in Cork came up with, and we think that by targeting the microbiome either with probiotics, prebiotics, or in the case of what we just published this week in terms of fermented foods, that we might be able to have a beneficial effect on mood, reduce stress levels, and increase social behaviors.
Well, let's talk about your most recent experiment then. You were looking at kefir, which is a fermented milk.
Yeah. So kefir has been used for a long, long time. It originated out of the Caucasus Mountains, you know, between Asia and Europe, and it's basically a grain made up of loads of bacteria and yeast, and it ferments milk and has lots of really beneficial bacteria are working and producing lots of key chemicals, and it has been shown to have multiple health benefits in the past. Although some of it is somewhat anecdotal, but everything from improving digestion to having effects on inflammation. But we wanted to look at, well, what about it in relation to behavior? And again, this is early days because it's animal studies. So, but I collaborated with Paul Cotter and his team, also in APC, but at the Chagas Research Center in Moor Park. And they're really excited about the utility of fermented foods in a variety of indications. And so we looked at compared milk that was fermented versus normal milk, and we found, you know, very, very specific effects on behavior that will be seen as beneficial in these animals if they take in the kefir. The other interesting point was that the kefir was different depending on which strain or which grain we had used. So not all kefirs, or kefirs as people often call them, are the same. And that was the other take-home message from these studies.
Yeah, because you wonder really which one can you trust, especially when there's such a health and wellness bandwagon at the minute and there's all kinds of labelling being put on bottles promising all sorts of things. So how do you know that you're getting a proper grade
one? It's very difficult, and the nice thing I think about kefir is that it's something you can make at home, so you don't have to be sold anything. Once you have the grain, it grows very quickly, and you can make your own kefir, and a lot of people do. And but without having proper testing of it, you don't know the full potential of it. But we're only starting to look at that. And so, but generally, there are some benefits that are across all aspects of milk kefirs, that they are promoting the beneficial bacteria like the lactobacilli. And most of these don't colonize the gut. They just work their way through, and actually then they're able to have beneficial effects. So what I like about it as a strategy is that it isn't anything that anyone, you know, basically people can use at home, and it democratizes some of the science in some ways. And so people even from different backgrounds could grow their own kefir every day, and they don't have to, all you have to pay for is the actual milk.
And why use mice in an experiment like this? When it's food, could you not use people and ask them about their mood more,
yeah,
and judge
and
more?
So that was the next step. And so we wanted to start somewhere where we could actually look at the actual brains, and looking at people's brains is quite difficult. And so we needed some signal to get a confidence that it was worth going into to move forward with the specific. And now we know which one of these to use. It's hard to do these types of studies in humans also because of the problems with blinding, because people know if they're making their kefir at home, they know they're doing something as well. But one of the things we want to do in the future is actually expand this now into into human situations, and so we'll be looking for funding for that. And of course, it's a lot more expensive to do these types of trials.
Well, if you want to find out more, there is a book that John has collaborated on. It is called The Psychobiotic Revolution. Professor John Cryan, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, the martial arts mindset.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
My next guest was in his mid-20s when he experienced depression, and he credits learning about martial arts and fighters who overcame struggles themselves with helping him to move on from his. He's documented it all in his book, You Versus You, and Adam Corcoran is on the line now. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. So when and how were you first introduced to martial arts?
Yeah, so I suppose I was introduced to martial arts from a very early age. Both my two older brothers and my dad are black belts in judo. So I always kind of grew up around it. I always grew up trying to strangle my older brothers or arm lock them. And it kind of went on from there. I competed internationally for Ireland throughout my teenage years and into my early 20s. But unfortunately, then funding kind of dried up for me. You know, judo is not a major sport in Ireland. And then came back to martial arts again, maybe in my mid-20s then, after a couple of years hiatus.
And what did you get from it at the time?
So judo meant everything to me. I suppose growing up, I grew up in kind of Hartstown in a small suburb of Blanche. And, you know, it kind of just gave me the self-confidence, I suppose, growing up as a teenager. You know, I suppose it was kind of aided somewhat by my two older brothers who were also, you know, practicing judo with me. But ultimately, it gave me self-confidence in my early 20s then, kind of tapered off, and kind of went through a severe depression then in my mid-20s. You know, judo was great up to a point, but I suppose depression hits everybody.
Yeah, and it can come at any time and in any way. But it was historical stories of martial arts that inspired you, and that's what you document in the book, Stories of Overcoming. Do you have a story or two that you could share, an example of what's in your book of that?
Yeah, exactly. I suppose one point to make about the book, it's not a self-help book. It's not prescriptive. Like you had said, it's stories of great martial artists throughout history. And I suppose this, you know, I'd look for role models when I was, you know, kind of coming back into martial arts, helped me, you know, cope as a coping mechanism almost to deal with my depression. And, you know, there's stories in the books that, you know, there's names in the book that people will recognize, you know, the Ronda Rouseys of the world, George Foreman, Muhammad Ali. And there's names that they won't mention as well, like Helio Gracie, for example, is a great story, one that I take, you know, kind of personal inspiration from. He was the man who many credit to have put the Brazilian in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know, he was able to defeat much larger men throughout his martial arts fighting career, even though he was only 65 kilos at the time.
And even we all know, or it's very common knowledge about Muhammad Ali. And I mean, yes, he was strong. Yes, he had skill, but it was the strength of his mind and his self-belief that seemed to be what made him stand out from everybody else. He fully believed that he was the best.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good way to, you know, it's a good place to start as well. The common misconception about martial arts is you're either thinking one of two things. You're thinking about, you know, an ancient dude in a weird robe with a wispy beard waving his hands around in the air. Or you're probably thinking currently of like MMA fighters and boxers. And, you know, where do you think that's, you know, your opinions on that as kind of being this, you know, the average IQ of these fighters. But they can teach us an awful lot about life. And I suppose Muhammad Ali is a great example of martial arts not just being, you know, a framework for physical conflict resolution, but also mental and emotional. You know, he went through an awful lot of stuff throughout his life, you know, black rights at the time in America. And I suppose for somebody who's just reading the book, you know, and is saying, well, I've never looked at martial arts. You know, Muhammad Ali is great, but what can I really learn from him? He was a good boxer. And I suppose at a very basic level, you know, we all need to fight, you know, like the president of the Ultimate Fighting Championships, Dana White, says fighting is in our DNA. We get it and we like it. And that's all the way from gladiators in ancient Rome to Olympic sports like taekwondo, wrestling and judo to today's mixed martial arts events. You know, fighting is a part of us. We deal with conflict every single day, whether that's physical, emotional or mental. And martial arts can give us a framework to resolve these conflicts, not just in the physical sense where somebody swings a punch at you. You know, I believe everybody on this planet, whether you're a Muhammad Ali fan or not, whether you're a Conor McGregor fan or not, martial arts can teach us a lot. You know, whether you're an intern starting off the corporate ladder in a Fortune 500 company, you're a mature student returning to study, or you're a single parent trying to do the best for your kids. Life is a fight. Life is a struggle.
Now, my kids themselves went to taekwondo for a little while and ended up clashing with the school football team, which those training nights, it won out in the end. But I was very impressed with the sort of discipline that it was giving the kids and the emphasis that was put on respect and the respect for the art itself. And it was said at every single training, and this is when they were, I don't know, 5 and 7. So they were young kids, and there were even younger ones being taught in the class before that violence was never an option. It's not to promote fighting or promote violence. And that's very important. Now, I will say in the same breath that when Conor McGregor was rising to fame, I was on the bandwagon and sat down one night eager to watch. And I couldn't even watch the lead up matches to him being the main event. I do always find it hard to watch anyone, be it Katie Taylor or anyone, in the ring. I just feel sorry for the person losing and think it looks quite painful. But I did find that with martial arts, that there was a massive emphasis on respect for yourself and respect for the other person and respect for the discipline of the martial art itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And even by, I suppose, immersing myself in martial arts, you know, throughout my teenage years, and then when I came back to it in my mid-20s, I truly found out just how helpful it can be in all facets of life. And you mentioned respect, that's one element, and sure, you know, you learn the, you know, I suppose the more animated physical side to it, you know, twisting people into human pretzels, but you know, you also gain a more practical skill set for life through martial arts. You know, I found that I could start to settle my inner emotional and mental conflict, you know, that almost I was able to twist my problems into pretzels too, based on the principles that I learned from martial arts.
And I'm sure you had lots of different things you used to help overcome your depression, but this was a real push for you. This was a real help. This was a real inspiration, reading about historical fighters.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, like I said before, you know, it's a book of stories of martial artists. I do find probably, you know, as opposed to being prescriptive in terms of you should do this, you should do that, you know, and all those kind of, you know, negative connotations that go along with, I suppose, the more traditional self-help, you know, the reason why you're not reaching your goals is because you don't want it enough, you know. I found more motivation in, you know, looking at true stories of people. And not everybody is going to want to be an MMA fighter. Not everybody is going to want to get in to martial arts. But somewhere along the line, the negative emotions we all experience as human beings, we just need to find somebody, you know, if I want to set up a business, I don't need to find somebody who set up a business before. I just need to find somebody who's conquered the kind of emotional freeze that comes along with starting a business to help me get to a next level. And for me, it wasn't, you know, I'm not some pasty ginger kid who climbed out of the pit of depression and onto the path of greatness and threw a ladder down for everybody else, right? I'm not gray, although I am a pasty ginger, but I'm not gray. when people read You Versus You, they'll get a sense that I'm just a student that sits one desk away from them. You know, the reason why I did all this typing was because this is the book I wish existed when I was suffering from negative mental health. The aim of this book is almost to throw an arm over to the reader, you know, as a mate and say, yeah, life is tough. It's a struggle. But here's some people throughout history that have felt the same emotions you're dealing with right now, and they overcame them. Maybe it'll help you too.
And you now teach beginner classes yourself. So what kind of a mix of people come to the classes, and what do you think you've learned from teaching?
Yeah, so I suppose I had started teaching beginner jiu-jitsu classes 3 years ago at SBG Ireland. You know, that's run by Coach John Kavanagh, home of Conor McGregor and the whole host of SBG Ireland MMA team. And surprisingly enough, you know, I had thought, okay, well, this is a fairly, you know, high profile MMA gym. You know, the beginners are probably going to be aspiring MMA fighters, right? But actually, it's a whole host of different people. At any given time, you could have, you know, a student who's practicing with a high-end solicitor, or you could have somebody in an engineering firm practicing with, you know, a single mother of two, right? It's really a kind of, it transcends, I suppose, these boundaries, right? You know, like at any given time, everybody is on the mat just trying to learn self-defense, some jiu-jitsu as well. And the kind of breakdown of the profile is quite wide. Surprisingly wide.
And how do you keep your mental health in check now, Adam?
Yeah, I suppose during the lockdown, I finally published a book, and that kind of kept me in check. I could focus on that. But in terms of exercising, I'm probably exercising more now than I ever was. You know, I'm finding time every day now. I go on a run. I have some kettlebells as well. You know, I have a dog that I try and do jiu-jitsu with, but it doesn't always work out, you know. But like, I'm keeping active right now.
Good
as much as I can.
And look, as you said, I like what you said. You said, look, I'm not somebody that crawled out and threw a ladder down for others and I'm saying, you know, look at me, I'm amazing. But to go from somebody who was feeling very low at one point to being on the radio now talking about a book you've written to help others, I mean, that's surely some kind of mountain that was climbed for sure that you're atop of now.
Yeah. But I suppose behind, you know, there's a famous quote, behind mountains are more mountains, you know. And I suppose, look, yeah, it's nice. You know, I get random messages on social media now from absolute strangers saying, I really enjoyed your book. Thanks for writing it. You know, when's the next one out? which is nice, you know, and I get some messages as well. So really positive feedback on the book, you know, which is always good.
Absolutely. Well, make sure you take a moment to stop and pat yourself on the back before you turn yourself into a human pretzel once again. The book is called You Versus You, Lessons from Great Martial Artists on Developing a Fighting Spirit for Life. It's available on Amazon now. And author Adam Corcoran, thank you very much.
Thanks, Claire. Appreciate it.
Coming up after the break, the effect of stress on our hormones and how you can keep yours in check with endocrinologist Dr. Mary Ryan.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
Now, your hormones might not be something that you give too much thought to. Well, to be honest, as a woman, you seem to be on a constant journey with them, whether it's going through the different stages or the more accused, be it self-inflicted or otherwise, about being hormonal. But is there a way you can be a master of your hormones, or are you at their mercy, be you male or female? Dr. Mary Ryan is an endocrinologist and an expert in the field and on the line now. Hello, Mary, how are you?
Lovely to talk to you again, Claire. How are you doing?
I'm good. And I suppose it is something perhaps you think a little bit more about as a female because of the different stages. But it's such an important part of our health system, isn't it? Our human system.
Unbelievable. The endocrine system controls all, which is the hormonal system. And as I said to you before, Claire, the hormone control center controls all of your muscles. So we all forget we're skeletons covered in muscle. So it covers all of your muscles. It controls all of your muscles, but also it controls the immune system. So of course, when we're in this COVID situation that we are, it's very important that you have a very well recharged hormone control center, because the more healthy you are, the better you're going to fare in a pandemic. So it's really, really important that we understand how hormones operate.
So what do hormones need to be healthy?
So we have a hormone control centre on top of our nose called the pituitary gland, and that controls everything. So it needs 8 hours rest at least. It needs a good healthy diet, and basically it needs us to pace as well. So 8 hours sleep is critical, because we're like iPhones. That hormone control centre is like an iPhone or a Samsung phone. It needs recharging at night because it's going all day. So hormones, basically every muscle in your body needs a hormone to operate. And everyone forgets that the bowel is a muscle. muscle, 5 meters long, wrapped up in itself. So, you know, when people talk about IBS, often it's just hormone imbalance. So that's really important. So rest, good nutrition, proper hydration. So get your 2 liters a day, but get them in before 6. You don't want them after 6 because the bowel needs the hydration, particularly in the morning. It's beginning to relax at night. So there's no point flooding the bowel with water at night. That's only going to disrupt your sleep later on in the night. So we don't want that. So good, healthy food, all the colours of the rainbow, as I always say. Try and get the porridge in the morning. Some people do Greek yogurt and fruit. That's fine. Middle of the day, it's beautiful weather now. Get the greens in. Get the peppers, get the tomatoes, the cucumber, and then tuna, chicken, salmon, and then only 2 cuts of bread. And that's where, as women in particular, women have way too much bread. We need to control the carbs, particularly as we get older, because metabolism slows down. And then in the evening, for dinner, just 1/4 plate of carbohydrate. So that's 1 potato, 1/4 plate of brown rice, or 1/4 plate of brown pasta, 1/2 plate of green veg, and then the 1/4 plate of meat or of fish. And then, of course, you can have your treat once a week, but only once a week. There's way too much sugar consumed, Claire, and the pituitary gland hates sugar. Sugar is quite toxic, actually, to the hormonal system. So I'm always telling patients to keep that sugar low. And particularly now when we're only to shop once a week, you can do that very easily by not putting the sugar in the trolley. So just do not put the sweet things in the trolley. And then on Sunday, get your treat, bring it in, because we're all human. If it's in the press, we're going to eat it. So that's the big thing I would say. 4 pieces of fruit a day, 1 banana a day because it's high in sugar, and you could have 3 apples or 3 pears. And then, as I said, get your 8 hours sleep. So that's the critical thing that you need to do. But then as women, Claire, we have periods every month up to from 12 to menopause. And if they're heavy at all or if they're out of sync, that can affect the hormone control center. So women were a little bit more complicated than men for that reason. So we have to listen to our bodies more. So if we have a very heavy period, we might need more rest. And that's the critical thing. And it can completely unset the pituitary gland or the hormone control center. So that's important to bear that in mind.
What about the type of rest that you're getting then? Because we have a lot of things that can disrupt our sleep. You were talking about if you're getting up to pee in the night, that would disturb your sleep. Because we've got these phones by our bed, so we can be flicking for too long. But we can also be tracking our sleep. So do you need to make sure you're getting 8 hours of deep sleep?
Totally.
And do you need to be making sure that you're resting your digestive system? We hear a lot about intermittent fasting and it can all be very confusing, but do you need to leave a gap between when you finish your last meal and when you have your next meal the next day to allow all that rest?
Absolutely. So ideally, Claire, your last meal should be 6 or 7 in the evening. And I don't mind people having Greek yogurt with a few blueberries if they want at 8 o'clock, but that's only a small snack, but that's it. So you don't eat till your breakfast the following morning. I always advise people have a jug of water beside the bed. Don't drink it during the night, but have your glass the minute you wake up and at last the minute you've washed and dressed. So you have 2 glasses in the bowel before you eat. But as you said, the phone should not be beside the bedside. I put mine out on the landing deliberately so that it's an alarm clock for me in the morning. But if I did wake up, at least I'm not going to look at it, because those megapixels really turn on the brain cells and we don't want that. So the deep sleep is critical, and the hormones control muscles, which control your sleep. So if your hormones are good, then you'll get that deep sleep that we need, that proper REM sleep where you completely recharge. Even however, you have a hormone imbalance going on and you have aches and pains in the muscles as a result, you don't get that deep sleep, so you're not getting that nourishing sleep. So it's about trying to do everything right and getting it right. So if the hormones are good, you're well recharged, energy is 10 out of 10, you have the good diet, not with the excess sugar, and you're doing good hydration, and you're also not overstressing, and you're pacing. So it's about trying to be superhuman, really.
But it becomes a habit, isn't it? It becomes a lifestyle as such. It sounds very regimented at the start, but then it just becomes the way you live. And when you feel good on the back of it, you're encouraged to do it more and more.
So meditation, relaxation. I'm forever saying to patients, listen to your body. If your body is tired, you don't go for the run. You sit down, you relax, you can do the fast walk later on. You know, some women come in to me completely burnt out, pituitary gland is wrecked, periods are all over the place, and they're running every day, which they shouldn't be doing because they're not able for it and their body's crying out for them to sit. So they need to rest. And then when they're recharged, then they can do it. But not, you're absolutely making things worse by doing that. So it's about listening to your body and doing what you need to do.
What about the sugar then that you mentioned? Because I think we've got confused as well as to what sugar is. There's mm-hmm. many of us wouldn't go near the bowl mm-hmm. of white stuff and have cut that out of our tea and coffee and whatever else. But do you count all kinds of honey, maple syrup, figs, dates, all that type of stuff?
Well, I like good natural sugar, so I have no problem with people scraping honey on the bread. I have no problem, like my diabetic patients, I don't believe in diabetic jam. I've always said ordinary jam sparingly, but scrape it on. And I would say that to everyone, because all of us, whether or not we're diabetic, should be just healthy eating. So a patient with diabetes should be eating the exact same as someone without diabetes. So all of us should be having one treat a week. So I say treat, I'm talking a confectionaries, and that's your sugar. But natural sugars are fine. So we can have 4 pieces of fruit a day, and that's natural sugar, and that's fine. But you can't have more than 1 banana a day, because bananas are higher in natural sugar. But as you said, Claire, like maple syrup is high in sugar. I would prefer people wouldn't use that. I let them scrape honey on their bread, and they're going to have 2 slices a day. I don't mind them having a teaspoon of honey in their porridge, but don't go over that. So it's about sort of being totally honest with yourself and saying, right, I'm having 1 confectionery, so if it's Cornetto once a week, that's fine, but otherwise I'm not going near sugar, not just the sugar and tea. I don't want that at all, but I don't want them adding biscuits in, because people forget a Marietta biscuit is 100 calories. To get rid of that, you're going to have to do a serious sprint for a good 30 minutes. So it's all about not putting it in there in the first place. And that's where the Greek yogurt with a few blueberries, if you do feel peckish at 8 o'clock, comes in. And also not having those biscuits in the press, because if they're there, you're going to eat them. And the other thing I forgot to mention, Claire, was not to overdo the caffeine. So the most we should have is 2 cups of tea or coffee a day. The rest of the time of water, or the herbal teas are very good. So the chamomile teas, they would be excellent. And one of the things that a lot of people always ask me about supplements, I have no problem with supplements, but I do want the diet to be right first. I want the diet to be perfect first. And then you can add your supplements like your vitamin D, which in Ireland we don't get much of. We're getting a great amount at the moment with our sunshine. We're blessed, but that's not always the case. And vitamin D is critical for hormones, you know. For women, I Clean Marine do have a very good supplement, which has got, for perimenopause and menopause, so it's got the natural phytoestrogens. It's got the vitamin D, which is critical for bones as well as the immune system. It's got the omega-3s. It's got the vitamin B6, B12, which are very good for nervous function. So I don't mind once I know what it is, but I don't want them taking a load of too many supplements and maybe over-concentrating. So it's important to take one that's well-recognised and that you're not overdoing it.
So what effect does stress have then on the hormones?
So when we get very stressed, we produce too much cortisol. And cortisol is the stress hormone. And basically, that interferes with the whole hormonal cycle. And it interferes with sleep. It interferes with, it causes, for example, it'll interfere with all the nerve muscle hormonal junctions. And therefore, it exacerbates the IBS. Or, for example, if it's sustained, so we all have, stress is normal, remember, right? But sustained stress will cause problems with the pituitary gland and the hormone control center. And that will affect the pulsatility of the hormones. And hormones have to be pulsatile. There has to be that circadian rhythm for them to be optimum. So if there is too much stress, and if as a result of that you're not sleeping, and you've got IB, irritable bowel syndrome, and as a result of that your pituitary gland is tired, then you're going to affect the circadian rhythms. And that ACTH is the hormone that controls cortisol. So if that's off, then your cortisol is completely off. And then eventually people actually get low cortisol when they need high cortisol. So for example, Claire, if you get stressed, you get a high cortisol, because that's how you deal with it. It switches on your autonomic hormonal system to help you cope with it. But if you're excessively fatigued, that cortisol doesn't go up, and therefore you go into a panic. So, you know, cortisol is a critical hormone, but it doesn't operate correctly if your system is overtired. So that's really important to remember. And it's because that whole circadian rhythm is off, that negative-positive feedback is off, because the whole hormonal system isn't operating right. So it's critical that you pace, that you're 10 out of 10 energy for that function. Because we would regularly see people that are absolutely exhausted, pituitary wrecked, and they're not having that spontaneous response, and the cortisol is low when it should be high. And they're coming in saying, God, is it my adrenals aren't working? And actually the adrenals are working, it's just they're exhausted.
Because we do live in a society, I know things have slowed down at the minute, but where we feel there's so much we have to do, whether it's personally, where with socialising and the things we're doing with our family, we're up, we're out, we're on the go. Then there is your dreams and aspirations with your career. That's all go, go, go. Then we're looking to exercise, as you say. We're all running and preparing for marathons and lifting weights and doing all of these things. And that's great that we have all of these things available to us. But there's one thing I've learned in the year of presenting this show, that really the general health advice is quite simple, and we seem to have forgotten that and overcomplicated it.
Totally. And Claire, the one thing the COVID thing has taught us all is it's pared everything back, and it basically has taught us what's important. Because if you take for working mothers and fathers, all the training sessions, which were excessive really when you look at it, you know, I've got twin boys and a little girl, and I was on the road four nights a week with hurling camogie matches, and really it was too much on top of a big working day, and every other parent had to do the same. But I think because all that's gone, it's a rest. I'm still working very hard in the day job, but all that's gone. And you know, it's a relief, because while I love them to be active, it was too much so, and they weren't having family time. So I think with the COVID thing, it sort of pared everything back, and we're now saying, hang on here, they don't need to be entertained four and five nights a week. We never got that, and we did well. So it's time to look at what's important. They're now having more family time. We're all having more family time. We're enjoying our homes. We're not on the road all the time, and as a result of that, our pituitary gland and our hormone control center is doing better. And then because we're not overtired, the hormones are right, so the muscles are more relaxed, so therefore we're getting that deep nourishing sleep that we need. Because we're not overtired, we're eating properly, because when you're too busy, you're eating on the run, and that's not good. Because in order to eat properly, the meal has to be digested. You've got to chew the food, the enzymes need to work, you need time to digest that meal. There's no point having amazing organic food in the fridge if you're not giving time to chew it, to eat it properly and digest it properly. So I think that the whole COVID thing has been marvellous in this sense, in that it's made us think what's important. Do you know what? The kids are happy and they're not going off four and five nights a week. Great. When all this is over, maybe we'll just keep it two nights a week and that's it. And yeah, we'll all have more family time, and we all know now what's important.
Yeah, definitely lessons to be learned.
Absolutely.
Well, look, everything you said there is absolute health and wellness gold, I think. For more, you can go to drmaryryan.ie. Endocrinologist Dr. Mary Ryan, thank you very, very much.
Not at all, Claire. You're more than welcome.
So that's it for this week on Alive and Kicking. Thank you to you for listening. Thanks to my producer, John Fardy, to Simon Keane and to Jojo Cordoza, who was on sound. Have a good week. I'll see you next Sunday.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20, code pod20, for 20% off your first product.